Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next 2 half-hour segments entitled Still More Fun with Science, we're going to once again engage in a speculative line of inquiry, and we're going to take a look at the possibility that biological warfare agents may be tested on, may be being tested on portions of the American population. There is an established history of this sort of thing being done, that is to say, experimenting on unwitting civilian test subjects. And in particular, in the next 2 half-hour segments, we're going to take a look at the possibility that elements of the Native American population may have been the targets of such testing. The following 2 half-hour segments are excerpted from the One Step Beyond broadcast of February 6th, 1994. We're going to take a look at an op-ed column which appeared in the New York Times of January 25th of 1994. This is a column by Leonard A. Cole, C-O-L-E. It's Dateline Newark, and it's entitled by the New York Times, The Worry, Germ Warfare, The Target, Us. Subheaded, An Army Cold War Program with Disturbing Ghosts in the 1990s. By the way, Leonard A. Cole is a professor of political science at Rutgers University in Newark and the author of Clouds of Secrecy, The Army's Germ Warfare Tests Over Populated Areas. After talking about the history of experimenting with various chemical and biological agents on unwitting civilian populations, the subject of the book, Clouds of Secrecy, Leonard Cole talks about rumors that have been started by that legacy, and then goes on to say, quote, The most recent involved the outbreak of a mysterious disease in the Southwest that has taken perhaps 30 lives since May. Hantaviruses, the apparent cause of the disease, have been studied by military researchers for years, and speculation has arisen that the viruses may have been connected to the outbreak. Suspicions could be alleviated if the program were under civilian jurisdiction and truly open. A 1989 Army document claims that all biological defense work is now unclassified. But in doublespeak, it also says that the results of that work may be classified. The Army still neglects to monitor the health of citizens who may be exposed during tests, even while insisting that its bacterial agents cause no harm. Equally disturbing, people are given no choice about being exposed. So apparently, others are also voicing suspicions about the outbreak of hantavirus in the American Southwest. I have been voicing suspicions, and I want to emphasize that they are no more than that at this time, although there are some firm indications that there may be grounds for those. There may be more to it than just suspicions. At this stage of the game, the hantavirus situation belongs in the category of what I have termed over the years and what is very familiar to my listeners as food for thought and grounds for further research. Speaking of further research, research credit on the following story goes to a listener. This is from the Wall Street Journal of January 14th of 1994. This is an article by Eric Larson, L-A-R-S-O-N, and Eric Morgenthaler, M-O-R-G-E-N-T-H-A-L-E-R, staff reporters of the Wall Street Journal. It's datelined Miami and headlined Death Threat, Killer Disease Borne by Rodents is Found in Wider Areas of U.S. Hantavirus, first discovered among Navajos, strikes a mechanic in Miami. Survivor, I am a miracle, unquote. The article reads in part, When Kenneth Spence, a 33-year-old mechanic, entered Jackson Memorial Hospital last October, he believed all he had was a case that was a bad case of the flu. By the time Richard Greenman, an infectious disease specialist, was called in 2 days later, Mr. Spence was unconscious and on a respirator. Fluid had begun seeping into his lungs to the point where he would soon stand a good chance of suffocating. His doctors at Jackson, which is affiliated with the University of Miami's medical school, were baffled. Had this been in the Southwest, Dr. Greenman observed, Mr. Spence might have been diagnosed as having a, quote, classic case, unquote, of hantavirus pulmonary syndrome. That is the deadly, rodent-borne disease first identified after an outbreak among Navajo Indians last May in the so-called Four Corners region of the country, where Arizona, Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico meet. But the mouse blamed for the disease, the deer mouse, or Peromyscus maniculatus, wasn't thought to live in South Florida. That's, by the way, Peromyscus, P-E-R-O-M-Y-S-C-U-S, maniculatus, M-A-N-I-C-U-L-A-T-U-S. And again, note that that mouse, the deer mouse, was not thought to live in South Florida. Continuing. Quote, So what I said, we're therefore going to call this a case of hantavirus pulmonary syndrome, ha-ha, because it doesn't exist here yet, unquote, Dr. Greenman recalls.
again quoting, "and we'll send off all the diagnostic stuff to see if anyone comes up with another answer," unquote. After nearly a month in intensive care, Mr. Spence recovered and left the hospital, still unaware of what had almost killed him. On Tuesday, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta confirmed that Spence had indeed been infected by hantavirus and in the process raised fresh concerns that the virus and its killer syndrome may occur over a far wider range than once thought. Mr. Spence had become the 54th victim of the new disease and only its 22nd survivor. The news of his infection followed on the heels of other evidence of the virus's long geographic reach. Just the week before, Kansas health officials began investigating the January 3rd death of an 18-year-old girl in Garden City, Kansas, who they suspected may be the state's second hantavirus victim. That same week, the CDC confirmed that the death of a 14-year-old boy in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, was the state's third case of the virus. One of the nation's foremost hantavirus investigators, Gregory Gurry Glass of the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, spent this week trapping rodents in Kansas and Idaho and was bound next for Florida. The disease is still relatively rare, especially when compared with the thousands of cases of Lyme disease diagnosed each year. Nonetheless, the virus has now turned up in 15 states, ranging from Florida to North Dakota to California. One death of a 22-year-old man took place in San Francisco, according to the CDC. Researchers now suspect the virus may be present in deer, mice, and other rodent species throughout the U.S., prompting widespread calls for restoration of federal rodent control programs and warnings from state health departments about the new hazards of mice in the home, including advice to wear gloves whenever removing a mouse from a trap and to use household disinfectants on areas where mice are thought to tread. Quote, "We're just telling everyone to treat every mouse as if it's infected," unquote, says Lori Richardson, administrator of the health department in Morton County, Kansas, home of the state's only confirmed hantavirus victim. The victim, a 34-year-old pregnant woman, died last fall. And again, note the geographical distribution of this disease first detected in the American Southwest. Skipping down in the article, the hantavirus in question is actually one of a family of similar viruses known to cause hemorrhagic fever in Europe and Asia and to have sickened thousands of soldiers during the Korean War. Other, more benign strains of hantavirus have long been known to reside in U.S. rats and mice, but until the Four Corners outbreak last summer, researchers had found only limited evidence that the virus has caused disease. Research in Baltimore, published just 2 months before the outbreak, found evidence only that one strain seemed to be implicated in causing a form of hypertension in residents who had been exposed to rats. Skipping down again in the article, as ominous as the news of new cases may be, researchers say the big mystery of the disease is why more people don't get infected. Again, this sentence here, because indeed this goes to the thrust of my own questions about the hantavirus. Obviously, I'm not a physician or a microbiologist or a virologist. On the other hand, at the ripe old age of 44 and a half, I know a little bit about human affairs and a little bit about the spread of disease. And there are a number of things about the hantavirus infections that don't seem to make sense to my layman's eyes. One more time, as ominous as the news of new cases may be, researchers say the big mystery of the disease is why more people don't get infected. Deer mice are common. Quote, "Anyone who lives in the country has had them in their house, whether they'd admit it or not, or if they even knew it or not," unquote, says Mr. Hopkins. Says Hopkins, Mr. Glass, by the way. That's a fellow researcher at Johns Hopkins. But he and other hantavirus, in fact, his first name, let me dig that out from the previous story. Well, I'll go back and get that a little later. But he and other hantavirus researchers, anyway, this Mr. Glass is a researcher at Johns Hopkins. Skipping back through the article, his first name is not immediately evident, but I will get that at the end of the reading of the story. Continuing with the article, but he and other hantavirus researchers now think it is fairly difficult to contract the virus. People get it through some form of direct contact with the mice or their waste, as by breathing residues of feces and urine. But the virus doesn't readily skip to humans, and while it is readily transferred from rodent to rodent, it apparently can't be passed from person to person. The virus doesn't do well enough in humans, unquote, says Mr. Glass. Indeed, one theory holds that the lethal damage is not done by the rapid growth of the virus in the body, but by the body's immune response to a relatively limited infection. Those who die may have experienced an especially powerful immune response. And this adds up to good news, says Mr. Glass. Quote, you don't have the potential for an incredibly explosive outbreak, the really scary plague-type thing we often think of. I would add that's his opinion, and I sure as hell hope he's right, but I think there are a number of things about this disease that warrant further investigation. Skipping down in the article, indeed, some Florida officials suspect Kenneth Spence contracted hantavirus because of changes in the area's rodent population in the wake of Hurricane Andrew, which ravaged much of South Florida in August of 1992. The deer mouse may not live here, but rodent experts say its close relatives do. Anita Bach, the top local official of the state's Health and Rehabilitative Services Department, cites, quote, a very significant rodent problem, unquote, in the south part of the county, the area hardest hit by the hurricane. Even before Andrew, she said, rodent control was being hampered by funding cutbacks. She stresses, however, that hantavirus pulmonary syndrome, quote, is an extremely rare disease, unquote, and adds, again quoting, we don't have any concerns of an outbreak in Dade County, unquote. And others caution against making too much of the Andrew connection. Quote, we have very little objective evidence to support that, unquote, says Gary Lady, the state's director of communicable disease epidemiology. The man's last name, by the way, is spelled Hladdy. So more questions than answers about the outbreak or the incidents, one so far, of hantavirus infection in South Florida. I would also note that most of the cases so far have taken place in rural areas, but there have been some that have taken place in urban areas. A man in San Francisco died. I would also note that this particular individual in Miami, contracted the hantavirus. One of the things that is striking about this particular story is the amount of information and the amount of the percentage of the degree to which the theories being offered up by the experts in hantavirus really would fall into the category of what I would term on this program food for thought and grounds for further research. They don't really know why people are getting this disease in the pattern they're getting it. They don't really know why it appeared in South Florida. And again, I want to stress I'm not only not an expert in hantavirus, I'm not a physician, a microbiologist, or a virologist. However, I do think that among other things, the curious geographical occurrence of this disease is something that warrants closer scrutiny. I would think that if apparently, according to this story, there have been a number of relatively benign strains of hantavirus present in the rodent populations of the United States, I would think that if there had been a mutation which had produced a more virulent and deadly strain of hantavirus in American rodents, that mutation would have spread to rodents in adjacent geographical areas. Again, the disease was first detected in the Four Corners area of the American Southwest. It has then since spread to 22 states out of the total. And some of the states in which people are getting it, Texas and Louisiana, are contiguous. Kansas, Wisconsin, Oregon, Washington. These are not areas that are geographically contiguous, and they're certainly not particularly close to the Four Corners area. And I would note now a case has turned up in Miami, and the powers that be, the bureaucrats and medical experts in Florida, are pretty much at a loss for an explanation, although they have theories, such as the Hurricane Andrew theory. One of the possibilities that I think needs to be seriously considered and looked into is that perhaps the hantavirus outbreaks are the product of some sort of national security activity. As we shall see, we've dealt with these stories in the past. The hantavirus has been a major focal point of U.S. Army biological warfare research in the past, and indeed the initial outbreak occurred near Fort Wingate, a military base now being decommissioned, which has been the site of chemical warfare tests in the past. And I wonder to what extent the hantavirus outbreaks might either be some sort of accident or perhaps some sort of deliberate testing of a virulent form of hantavirus to view its biological warfare potential. One of the things that we looked at in Radio Free America program number 16 is the fact that biological warfare agents have long been tested on unwitting sections of our own and other populations. In particular, people of third world extraction have been singled out for various forms of experimentation. And I would also note that the use of a rodent-borne vector, if in fact, and I say if in fact, something like that is in fact is being developed, the use of a rodent vector, the use of rodents to traffic around this disease, would be something that would affect poor people more than it would more affluent individuals. Poor people, not only in this country but elsewhere, are more likely to come in contact with rodents than more affluent people who live in relatively wealthy neighborhoods. That's not to say that the mansions of the rich and powerful don't get their occasional house mouse, but the wealthy and the well-off in this country and others are not in the position of having to cohabit with rodents, such as the rats which afflict inner-city areas in this country and that are endemic in many other poorer areas. If, in fact, elements within ours or some other government were at some point looking to eliminate segments of humanity that are deemed superfluous, a rodent-borne virus would be one way of doing it. Rodents would be a good way of spreading a disease that would afflict poor people more than it would other population groups. And note again, as we examined in the background of Dr. Severing, note that the Nazi euthanasia programs led directly to the Nazi extermination programs, and in turn, they grew out directly out of the international eugenics movement and the international mental hygiene movement, mainstream intellectual movements which have very, very significant and very influential representatives in the American intellectual and medical communities as well. This is not something that we should lose sight of. The sorts of abuses that took place in Nazi Germany are not something that is limited to Nazi Germany. Indeed, a number of dissenting physicians with regard to the radiation experiments that have recently come to light have termed the experiments basically, not, quote, Nazi, unquote, in character. And certainly there may be some sort of benign explanation for the sudden occurrence of this disease, but I have questions about the epidemiology. I would tend to think that if a mutation had taken place in a single, or if a mutation had taken place with regard to a hantavirus strain already present in American rodents, that its spread would be to geographically contiguous areas. If, say, there was an outbreak in the Four Corners area, you would expect states bordering on the four states there to be the places that the virus would be discovered. It would naturally, it would seem to me, spread from rodents in the Four Corners area to rodents in adjacent areas. Certainly, a mouse or a rat or something could climb onto a freight car or something and make it to another area. But the sort of scattershot geographical occurrence of these hantavirus outbreaks raises questions in my mind. And again, they're no more than that. But I do think that these are questions that demand answers. And I think some much more profound and more critically sensitive research needs to be conducted than what has apparently been conducted to date. Because whether or not the hantavirus is the natural occurrence, the hantavirus outbreak is the natural occurrence we are told that it is, or whether there's more to it, there certainly is a history of experimentation on unwitting civilian populations in this country, both with regard to both chemical and biological agents as well as radiation. And we should note, as we have in the past, that the hantavirus in particular was a major focal point of U.S. biological warfare research. I'm now going to reread two articles that I've read twice each previously on this broadcast. Veteran listeners will please bear with me on this. I have not, however, read these two articles back to back, and I want listeners, I want members of the listening audience to have copies, to have tapes of both of these articles, or to have a tape with both of these articles so that they can refer to it. And again, I strongly encourage people who listen to this program to do what they can to disseminate information. And among the information that I think needs to be disseminated is the following article. Research credit on this goes to a listener, by the way. This is from Science Magazine of June 11th, 1993. That's volume 260. In the Science Scope section, edited by Richard Stone, we find the following This is entitled by Science Magazine, As Rare Virus Waxes, Army Viral Research Wanes. The article reads, last week, U.S. health officials tentatively fingered a member of the hantavirus family as the cause of an outbreak of flu-like illness blamed for the deaths of seven people in New Mexico and Arizona. Now comes the bitter irony. For nearly a decade, the U.S. Army maintained a program for studying just such a virus until it began shutting it down a few years ago. The Army's interest in hantaviruses dates to the Korean War. Korean hemorrhagic fever, caused by a hantavirus, killed nearly 400 U.S. soldiers in Korea in the 1950s. About 10 years ago, the Army began studying the virus at the Army Medical Research and Development Command at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and in the late 1980s expanded the work to its medical research unit in South Korea. But after the Gulf War, Congress criticized the military for pursuing arcane studies at the expense of germ warfare research. In response, the Army began phasing out hantavirus work at Fort Detrick and closing the Korean outfit. As a result, even though hantaviruses, quote, were clearly a potential biological warfare agent, unquote, claims one scientist familiar with the military's work, again quoting, virtually all of the excellent viral work was terminated, unquote. Many of the Army's hantavirus scientists left the military, except one team at Fort Detrick that continues to pursue a hanta vaccine. Army scientists have developed a diagnostic test and a potential therapy. However, little is known about how the virus causes disease. That could pose a problem for public health officials who may someday wish they had a hanta vaccine in hand. Again, note that this particular virus was deemed a very likely, a potentially very useful biological warfare agent. Note that the research was being phased out due to Cold War budgetary cutbacks. I would also note that there is a pattern of using a civilian cover for military research, in particular in the field of biological warfare research. Among the items that were read into the record as part of the archives in Radio Free America number 16 is a landmark article by Richard Hatch in Covert Action Information Bulletins and issue number 39 that deals with the close working relationship between biological warfare research and the National Cancer Institute's Viral Cancer Research Program. Again, that is available from Covert Action Information Quarterly, as they now call themselves, and it's also read into the record almost in its entirety in an addendum to Radio Free America number 16 done in early 1992. So again, note that this virus, which is now afflicting Americans in a deadly way and which was previously undiscovered, has been a focus of biological warfare research in the past. That has led a number of people to wonder whether perhaps there might be more to this outbreak than what we have been told. Another article that people should bear in mind as we evaluate the hantavirus situation. This research credit on this also goes to a listener. This is from Scientific American of November of 1993, an article by John Horgan, H-O-R-G-A-N. It's headlined or entitled, "For Four Corners Victims, Biowar Casualties?" Question mark. It reads in part, could a mysterious disease that has taken at least 16 lives in the Four Corners region of the Southwest since this past May be related to the U.S. Biological Warfare Program? In June, federal and state investigators blamed the outbreak on hantaviruses. Although hantavirus-related illnesses were unknown in the U.S. before this year, they have been studied by military and civilian researchers since the 1950s, when U.S. troops fighting in Korea became infected with a flu-like disease that attacks the kidneys. The virus, named after Korea's Hantaan River, that's H-A-N-T-A-A-N, is carried by rodents and is transmitted by airborne particles of the feces or urine of infected animals. The Four Corners illnesses were almost certainly caused in this way, asserts C. Mac Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L, an epidemiologist for the state of New Mexico, who notes that the virus had previously been detected in deer mice in the area. Rumors have nonetheless persisted among Native Americans and others in the Four Corners region that Fort Wingate, an army base near the epicenter of the epidemic, was somehow involved. In June, Senator Jeff Bingaman, B-I-N-G-A-M-A-N, of New Mexico, queried the Pentagon about possible biological warfare activities at the base. The Pentagon acknowledged that the fort was once used as a storage depot for chemical weapons, but denied that biological weapons were ever held or tested there. And again, I would note that if the Pentagon's denial here may be right on the money, but if in fact that fort was used for biological weapon testing or storage, it is unlikely that the Pentagon would admit it under the circumstances. Continuing. Yet, Fort Wingate has served as a target site or, quote, impact zone, unquote, for missiles launched from other military bases, according to a former congressional investigator who requested anonymity. One possible launch site is the Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah, several hundred miles to the north. The Army has conducted experiments at Dugway with both chemical and biological agents for decades. Dugway earned notoriety in 1968 when a jet aircraft from the site accidentally released nerve gas over a nearby ranch and killed thousands of sheep. The investigator suggests the tests initiated at Dugway may have infected the Fort Wingate region with biological agents years ago. The epidemic may then have been triggered by demolition or other disturbances related to the decommissioning of Fort Wingate early this year. There is also reason to doubt that all the Four Corners illnesses stemmed from hantavirus, the investigator notes. And this is very interesting. Fewer than half the victims tested positive for hantavirus. Moreover, deaths were attributed not to kidney failure, the usual outcome of hantavirus infection, but from hemorrhaging of the lungs. Congress recently appropriated $6 million for a study of the Four Corners outbreak. Well, whether or not this was in fact hantavirus, certainly the Four Corners outbreak has led to a renewal of research into hantavirus infection. I do think the anomalous nature of these infections needs to be looked into, at least to my layman's eyes. The information presented here would suggest that perhaps, at least in the Four Corners outbreak, something other than hantavirus infection may have been at the root of some of the people that were afflicted. Again, we do not have a hard connection with regard to the hantavirus outbreak, yet with the Fort Wingate situation, with Fort Wingate an admitted area of chemical weapons storage and testing, and with hantavirus itself having been a major focal point of military research and specifically BW research in the United States, and given the geographically capricious nature of the infections that have turned up so far, the possibility that either some sort of accidental release of a toxic or a biological warfare or chemical agent might be the culprit, or that perhaps some sort of clandestine testing of agents previously developed might be going on is something that should be seriously considered. In particular, we need to look at the possibility that perhaps, if indeed the speculation concerning Fort Wingate is correct, that we might, whether or not if Fort Wingate was involved, whether it was accidental or whether the infections were deliberately spread, we may be looking at Fort Wingate Gate. And indeed, I find the strange geographical distribution of the hantavirus infections to be something that warrants closer scrutiny than has been given so far. In particular, I find the incidence of a case in South Florida very strange, because that is not particularly close to any of the other sites of hantavirus outbreak. There may be a perfectly logical medical explanation, perhaps, as some researchers have theorized, and it's no more than that. It's very difficult for a human being to contract this particular investigation. Certainly that's a possibility that needs to be seriously considered. But in light of the history that our national security establishment, and it's certainly not alone in this regard, has of testing of various things, from radiation to chemical weapons to biological agents, on unwitting civilian populations, I think that the hantavirus outbreak needs to be examined in terms of a possible testing program of some kind. And in particular, as I say, I find the infection of Mr. Spence in Miami to be very, very strange. Whether or not it's significant, he was being housed at a drug treatment facility there, and often inmates, junkies, and others have, as a matter of record, been used as people who were considered expendable have been used as experimental subjects in these particular types of experiments, the type that Leonard Cole described in his book, Clouds of Secrecy. And in general, the hantavirus situation needs to be looked at, I think, against the background of BW research and possible testing. And in particular, I wonder whether the Miami outbreak is really the natural occurrence that we are told. Maybe it was Hurricane Andrew and an explosion in the rodent population. On the other hand, the possibility, note the use of the term possibility, the possibility that we may be looking at some sort of national security operation is also something that needs to be looked into. Miami mice, so to speak.